Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. As President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump prepare to take the stage for Thursday's presidential debate, will they be able to address one of the most important questions facing America right now? How will they tackle Alzheimer's, the most pressing public health crisis of our time? Will debate moderators and candidates engage in a thoughtful discussion on how to deal with this growing problem? We're joined by George Vladenberg. He is the chair and co-founder of Us Against Alzheimer's. And George, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, Dave. Glad to be here.
So, you know, people are looking at President Biden and former President Trump, and these are two men who are of advanced age. And right now, the current dialogue, what's happening in the popular media is like, Biden is being accused by the Trump's campaign of him being senile, and then there's other people in social media saying Trump is no longer working at his full potential mentally. So we're not going to talk about trying to diagnose these two guys from here. It's inappropriate. It's not what we can do, and it doesn't get us anywhere. But it does seem like Alzheimer's and discussions about that should be on the stage, because people will be thinking about it when they watch the debate, shouldn't they?
No question. Alzheimer's, as you know, it is one of the major public health issues of our time. Our own polling shows that 50% of American voters in 2024 this fall say they have Alzheimer's in their family or the close friend. 25% say that they're actually a caregiver. 25% of the likely voters this fall are caregivers for someone with Alzheimer's or another dementia. So this is like 85 million people who have a close friend or a family member. This is another 20 to 30 million people who are actually caregiving today. This is a big issue for American families. It's not just older Americans. Obviously, that is a greater concern. But they have children who are taking care of them. They have grandchildren who are not likely to be going now on a family vacation because we've got to take care of grandpa or grandma or aunts or uncles. So this is a family issue. It's not just because people are getting Alzheimer's. It's a family issue. Families are being impacted. Presidents should address this issue.
Yeah, regardless of who the presidential candidates on the stage are and what their age should be, this is a pressing issue that is growing every day as a challenge to the United States, the economy, and to the healthcare system. So their number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, George, you're saying you want a debate moderator Jake Tapper to say, talk about Alzheimer's. Some people might think that's a question that would be in bad taste, given the advanced ages of these candidates. What would you say to that?
So this has nothing to do with age. This has to do with their mental fitness. And I think both of these candidates are mentally fit. I do. So I think this is the time for these two candidates to step out and say they'll do something about this public health crisis of major dimensions. The cost to the American government now of these diseases, Alzheimer's and other dementias, is well over $300 billion, and almost a like amount being spent by American families on out-of-pocket costs or caregiving costs. And Senator Roy Blunt, a well-known, now retired, Republican senator from Missouri, conservative senator from Missouri, said by the 2040s, predictably, the cost of Alzheimer's to the federal government, Medicare and Medicaid, is going to be greater than the national defense budget. Now, that is a big number. And so this is a fiscal issue as well as a social and financial issue for families. Most of the likelihood of getting Alzheimer's now, twice as likely for women, twice as likely for blacks than whites, about 1.5 times for Latinos than non-Latino whites. So this has a disparate impact by gender and sex, and a disparate impact by race. And it has this dramatic impact on American families. And as I say, a dramatic impact on the fiscal economic costs to the federal government.
Right. So you should be looking at this as a federal funding issue. The cost of Alzheimer's, it's the most expensive disease in the nation. What makes it the most expensive disease in the nation?
It's the duration of the disease. So average time from diagnosis, which tends to be too late in the progress of the disease, to death is over 8 years. Several of those years are spent in almost total dependency on in-home caregiving, family members taking time off away from jobs, or in assisted living facilities or in Medicaid nursing homes. So it is the drag on the duration of the disease, the drag on Americans' ability to spend money as consumers or on vacations or something else when they're having to spend it on caregiving costs at home. And much of the cost is out-of-pocket costs for Americans who are taking care of their families at home.
What about
it's a testament to the American family, but it's a burden.
What about the cost and just the wear and tear, the emotional hardship?
The likelihood, if you're a caregiver, you're likely to die 2 years sooner than you otherwise would because of exactly that, Dave. Thank you for calling that out. It is a stress. It is an emotional drag. And indeed, we see physical and emotional and mental health issues with caregivers because of the burden. And so you're absolutely right.
So we have seen, though, in the last 10 years, this incredible amount of ramp up in funding for research to try to figure out what is the cause and can we find some sort of medical intervention for Alzheimer's. I know you're going to say it's not enough because, you know, the problem continues, the trend continues. But how much would you like to see? What numbers?
Well, I think my solution is to invest until we get a solution. So one of the questions one might ask is, when you invest a dollar a day in research, how long does it take to actually get a medicine to market? The two drugs that are about, one is on market today from Eisai and Biogen. A second drug, disease-modifying drug, about to be approved by the FDA from Lilly. Those drugs were developed and designed 20 years ago. It takes that long for basic research to move into a product. Now, the slowness of this is in large part just scientific, the development to assure it works, that it's safe, and then all the trials that you go through in human trials to make sure it works and it's safe. But it takes time. So the ramp up in research that we've had over the last 10 years, and you're absolutely right, we've gone from $400 million a year to about $3.8 billion a year now. That wave of investment is about to turn to fruition in the next 5 to 10 years. So this is a slow process, but there's no question. But because the brain is so complex and so difficult to treat, that it's going to take resource. But if you said that it's costing the United States government $350 billion today, $3.8 billion, which is roughly 1%. If you had a CEO who had a $350 billion cost problem, and he was spending 1% of that amount to try and solve his cost problem, you'd say that's not enough. I don't know how much is enough, quite frankly. I just think that every year NIH has been directed to tell Congress, how much more money do I need next year to get to my goal of curing this disease? And that's what's happened, is that the ramp up has been about $200 to $300 million a year over the last 10 years, because basically NIH has come to a professional judgment about what they need to invest in the following year to get to the goal of curing this disease.
So you think we need a moonshot type of attitude for this? Like, you know, just let's open up the floodgates with the and give us the money needed to solve this as quickly as possible.
Well, the moonshot was a special thing, right? Basically, we set up NASA as a government-owned and operated enterprise in order to do this. This is going to be solved not just by government, although government's a part of it, but it's by industry as well. What kind of policies do we adopt to incent innovation in industry? Because industry invests more than the federal government in curing this disease. So that has, what's the policy at the FDA? What's the policy at Medicare? What's the American health system and Medicare do in order to get people prescribed and on these drugs in order to reduce its burden on America? So, yes, in part, it is spending more money, but moonshot is tough, really, to call this and say we're going to cure this disease by 2030. My own view is that we may have a vaccine for this disease by 2030. And if the government invested in that and really made an effort at that with industry and with academic researchers, with patients sort of demanding it, I think we have a shot at getting this done by 2030. But so, I don't think I'm going to put all of this in a NASA-like government vehicle to do that.
So you think a virus could be at the heart of Alzheimer's?
It could be, although the vaccines that are now being tested in phase two clinical trials are basically preventing the buildup of the toxic proteins that we now know are one of the central elements of this disease. So the vaccines in development are not aimed at an underlying infectious agent, but in fact the underlying biological process, which results as a consequence of aging in part, but in consequence of genetics in part, and in part a consequence of lifestyle.
So trying to prevent the buildup of the plaque that grows in the brain.
Exactly.
And so
I would say Texas is right on the cusp of all this. Texas has got some enormous assets, the University of Texas. Rice University has stepped up at the Baker Institute there with a new neuro institute led by Harris Ayer. So that Texas is stepping up there. Before the Texas legislature right now is a proposal to have Texas invest in research in Texas to make Texas a leading state in the investment in the solutions to this disease, following California, and Florida is now just stepping up too. So the state, it's not just the federal government, but the states, for their own pure economic as right. well as social purposes, are stepping up on this.
UT Health Science Center in San Antonio also leading the way. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. With me is George Vredenburg. He is the chair and co-founder of Us Against Alzheimer's. His organization is calling for a question on the presidential debate, asking the two candidates, where do you see the priority of dealing with this public health crisis of Alzheimer's disease in America? The number to call in if your questions and comments about this problem, this crisis, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Christine on the line. And Christine, you're on the air.
Thank you. I definitely feel Alzheimer's, the policy surrounding it, the health crisis, should definitely be presented at the debate. To me, it's a fair topic. My concern is the way Donald Trump, to me, is treating the subject. He just seems very disrespectful. And for many families and for many people who are dealing with family members who have this very serious disease, I just feel this topic deserves respect, a very respectful dialogue. And I'm just not sure if one candidate can offer that. And that's what really gets me is the disdain and the dismissiveness of one particular person up on that stage. And I think he should be called out for that because this is serious,
Christine,
and demands and deserves respect.
Christine, thank you for the call. So, George Vredenburg, how do you see what's going on in America, the conversation we're having, like Christine alluded to, is it hurting being able to talk seriously about age-related cognitive decline in Alzheimer's?
I'll say two things. Yeah, there's still a stigma attached to this, although it's diminishing through time as more people speak out, like Christine just spoke out. We need more people to speak out, not be afraid to talk about the disease. Families who have a loved one who is repeating questions or comments and forgetting things ought not to be pulled out of the social discourse. They ought to be kept into the social discourse, because we now know that social conversation is one of the brain stimulants in life. The other point I would make is that we have, at least with Congress, have found this to be a very bipartisan issue. This is one on which Republicans and Democrats agree. I'm a Republican by background, by chance. My wife, a Democrat. We go to Congress as the Alzheimer's Party because this disease does not know whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. This disease doesn't care whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. This disease is attacking families. So either a Republican or a Democrat or both, to Christine's point, ought to have a respect for this disease, a respect for what's happening to American families with respect to this disease, and ought to be speaking out with some policy solutions or at least point of view about the importance of this disease. And so I agree with Christine entirely. We need a respect for the disease and a respect for each other as we talk about this disease. But the stigma is still out there.
There's been a lot of talk these days and research into the body's microbiome, about how our bodies have been colonized by different forms of bacteria. We use it to help us digest food in our gut. But there's also people have discovered we have a microbiome living in our brain as well, and the two are connected. And some people have theorized that the plaque that builds up in the brain, people think could be the cause of Alzheimer's, that is a result of a microbiome that is not healthy in the brain. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that, George?
Well, Dave, you're on top of it. There is a connection. Our body is just one body. The number of neurons in the brain equals the number of stars in the sky, and the number of connections that each of those neurons has is by 1,000. So you're the most complex object that we know of in the universe is our brain. But it also connects to another complex system, which is your microbiome, your gut. And we know what you eat and how you deal with gut issues. And as I say, eating, exercising, and the like does have an effect on the brain. People have not yet found exactly what that connection is or how to use the connectivity between the gut and the brain to derive potential therapies. But there's no question that the body is one body. The biome is connected to the brain to the biome. And we have to, among other things and other attributes, be looking at that connection.
Right. So in the clinical trials and research area, you mentioned this optimistic, you know, that you were thinking that there would be maybe a vaccine, what, within the next 10 years. Are you alone in that assessment?
No. Johnson & Johnson has a vaccine now in a very large phase 2 trials. Takeda has just signed an agreement with a biotech to take that biotech's product into phase 3 trials. So we're looking at two large companies and several smaller biotechs that are developing vaccine candidates. Those vaccine candidates are targeted either at beta amyloid, which is one of these toxic proteins in your brain, or tau, another toxic protein in your brain. But there are others who believe that there are other routes to a vaccine. So you're going to be seeing, Dave, coming off of this show, you're going to be seeing in the next couple of years a lot of talk about whether there's a way to prevent this disease by going into people who do not yet have any symptoms of the disease and stopping or slowing dramatically the progression of the disease so that you never get symptomatic Alzheimer's. Take HIV as an example. We don't have a vaccine for HIV, but we have interventions now, today, in which you can be HIV positive and never die of actual AIDS. So we're going to be seeing in the next 5, 6, 7 years, dramatic movements along this line towards intervening in the course of this disease. In the 20-year period we now know, between the time you get some of the underlying pathology of the disease and the symptoms of the disease, we're going to see interventions in that period to see if we can't stop or slow this disease so you never get symptomatic disease. And I believe that that's quite possible within the next, as you say, 10 years. My target would be 2030, but then I'm probably older than you. So I'm looking for moving faster.
Well, what about reversal of symptoms?
Well, we're seeing from recent early trials of lifestyle interventions done by Dean Ornish, who was famous for pointing out 40 years ago, that in fact exercise was good for the heart. He was laughed at that there was a connection between actually exercise, a lifestyle factor, and heart disease. Now that's sort of common wisdom. He recently did a study which took people with mild cognitive impairment, the early symptomatic forms of this disease, and caused it to be reversed to people who no longer had any cognitive impairment. Now, that's a small trial, but it's an important trial, an important indicator that we can do things today with our lifestyle, eat well, exercise, sleep, social relations, just normal human interaction, music. There are a variety of things you can do today which actually improve the performance of your brain to be able to resist this disease. And in fact, as I say, Dean Ornish has come up with this study that actually in humans, he has been able to demonstrate a small study that maybe you can reverse at least the early stages of mild cognitive impairment. It's very exciting. And obviously, as they say in the research world, we'll need more studies. Of course we do. But
well, so Alzheimer's, though, is we know about early onset Alzheimer's. It's not just a disease of old age. There are many, many people who get it under the age of 65 who are showing the symptoms of that. Is that number growing? Are we seeing a trend where there is a growth in early onset Alzheimer's?
We certainly are seeing an increase in its diagnosis. I think for too long we've regarded people in their 50s who are stressed at their jobs, and basically we're thinking they're underperformers or there's something the matter with them at home. And in fact, what we're finding is that physicians now are beginning to look at whether those stressors and that underperformance and that maybe cognitive decline in your 50s is not just stress and not just some other aspect of your life, but in fact is caused by Alzheimer's. So yes, the diagnosis rates are going up. Understand that there are genetic influences on this disease. So you have an APOE4 gene is what it's called. If you get one of those from one parent, you have maybe a 5 to 10% increased risk of getting Alzheimer's. But if you have two, one from each parent, the likelihood of you're getting Alzheimer's, symptomatic Alzheimer's, by the age of 65 is close to 90%. So there are increasing ways to detect, if you wish to, whether or not you have genetic risk for the disease, and whether or not you should get an annual checkup. Just like we do a checkup for the heart, we should be doing a checkup for the brain. We haven't gotten there yet with the medical profession and with government policy, but that's where we're going, that we're going to get an annual checkup on our brain at age 50. And we have doctors who can actually say, these are the lifestyle changes you need. These are things you need to do with your heart or your diabetes or your obesity to reduce the risk of dementia in the future. And these are the things you should do with your, as I say, your lifestyle.
So it's unlikely that Jake Tapper is going to ask the candidates about Alzheimer's, and that's, you know, a shame. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think this is an important issue for American families. So I look at this through the family lens to say, why aren't our leaders addressing this major public health crisis? But you're absolutely right. This election, all the media play is on the cognitive fitness of either or both of these two candidates. And I think that would be seen, I think, just as a play by Jake Tapper on that issue. But that is a way, it seems to me, there's a way to ask this question. It has nothing to do with age. I mean, Jane Fonda is over 80. I mean, the lead singer on the Rolling Stones is over 80. He's jumping around the stage and, you know, concerts every night. So this is not an issue of age. It's an issue of whether these two candidates really have mental fitness. We'll be able to see that. So we should ask them on the tough questions on how they're going to deal with this public health crisis.
And it certainly would have a best interest in, supporting public health and the future of the United States.
Yep.
Perfect. All right. George Vandenberg, thank you so much for joining us. Chair, co-founder of Us Against Alzheimer's, thank you so much for bringing this message to us.
Thank you, Dave.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.